It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Kevin Toefel joins us, filling in for Stacey Higginbotham. Jeff Jarvis is in the studio. He was at Google I.O. We'll get the highlights. We'll also unbox a little something he got at the Google I.O. conference. And we'll take a walk. I'll actually make Jeff go outside to take a walk with Google Maps. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
This Week in Google, episode 507, recorded Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. Machine learning is the new chicken sexer. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twig and using the promo code TWIG at checkout. And by ExpressVPN, protect your online privacy with one click. Yep, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse. Which this week will be all from the Googleverse. We're not going to talk about Facebook or Twitter and anything else. Except maybe the Times-Picayune. Joining me right now in studio, he was at Google I.O. yesterday. Jeff Jarvis has taken the chance of driving up the Golden Gate Bridge and joining us here in studio. It's great to have you.
It's good to be here.
From the Newhart School.
Newhart? No, it's Bob Newhart. Newman! No,
from the Bob Newhart School of Journalism. It's not the name?
No.
It's the Craig it's Newmark.
Newmark. It's not Newman. It's Newmark.
The Craig Newmark School, Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And we love having you in studio, so it's nice to see you.
Here.
Your color is so much better in real life.
I didn't realize it's Wednesday. It's smell like soy sauce day here at Twit.
Well, we don't always have Chinese, but we did today.
Okay.
Yeah, we did today. And right. I hope you partook of our festive feast for all of our...
Leo was so good, he just ate broccoli.
I had some beef with the broccoli. Kevin Toefel's back, too. He was here. It was so great to have you, Kevin, filling... Well, you weren't really filling in. You were joining me for the keynote yesterday of Google I.O., and then you took off because Liverpool-Barcelona was about to start.
Yes, yes, yes. And somehow, some way, we needed 4 goals and got them.
So
one,
he's very
and we
happy.
Are moving up.
Very happy. But yeah. You did something very, I thought, impressive. At the same time as you're watching this most important football game, you also watched the developer keynote.
Yes, I did. I had to mute the game, and I was shouting and screaming and jumping around every time we scored. But on the other screen, I was listening to and watching the developer keynote for Chrome OS news because there wasn't any in the main keynote. So, yeah.
Kevin is, of course, the guy behind AboutChromebooks.com, so it is kind of a professional.
My beloved about Chromebooks. His beloved. I love
Our
I love
beloved.
It.
It's we all style. Love it.
Yes, we love About Chromebooks.
Yeah. And
my Bible.
Co-host with Stacey Higginbotham on the IoT podcast.
And so I saw Rick Osterloh after yesterday.
He was on stage. Rick, people remember from the old Motorola days,
right.
when Google bought Motorola, he came over, introduced the Moto X, and now is in charge of all Google hardware.
So after they said he was doing his Oprah moment, and we hoped that would be having a self-driving car under the seat, but we didn't get that. But we did get phones. But I went up to him and I said, I have one thing to say. It's not a question. It's begging. I love my Chromebook.
Please.
And he said, we're committed to Chromebooks.
Good. So there may be a new Pixelbook.
Yeah.
And we have 4 teachers from Sacramento who are fist pumping right now. I guess you guys use Chromebooks in the schools. Yeah. Nice. Nice. Yeah. I love Chromebooks.
Love them.
And they should be committed to Chromebooks. It's doing so well, it's causing Microsoft to kind of shift its direction with its hardware. They're going to do a version of Windows Lite designed to be basically a Chromebook for schools. I don't know if Apple's changed its direction, but I think it's an important product. But let's start by talking about this, because the Pixel 3a was the big announcement at Google I.O., and I authorized Karsten to run out to the Verizon store. He's been still using, which like a really old phone. So we thought we'd get him a new phone.
I've still got the OG Pixel.
OG?
Whoa.
That's a long time ago.
Oh, that is.
Yeah. So you deserve a new one. Jeff and I were both puzzled by, can you get a close-up of the back of this box? Because we're both puzzled by the graphic on the back of the box. There's the phone. There's a chair. There's a manila envelope. There's a piece of concrete. I don't understand.
It's terrible.
What is that?
Why, it can't be anything else. It's concrete.
Why would you put that on the box? To show how tough it is?
But it's not. It's plastic.
Yeah, well, it's not.
It's better than glass.
True.
So let's open it up. Do you mind, Carson, if I open your new phone?
Do it at the same time? Unboxing.
Please. Unboxing. So a nice little plastic strip here that we were easily peel off. Uh-oh, there's two of them. That's a lot better than trying to slit it with your thumb.
How long is it since we've done unboxing?
It's quite a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring, really.
It's very. Well, why did we ever think this was interesting?
Now it's a new thing on YouTube for kids.
Let's make a 20-minute video unboxing. Out of it.
So this really feels pretty nice, actually.
It does.
This does. I mean, plastic's a fine material. It's not a.
They gave us cases too.
Oh, that's good. Were they made out of concrete? So the sacrifice you're making here, there are a few. It doesn't have the depth sensing camera on the front, just the standard 8-megapixel front facing camera. The back does, though, have the same 12.2 megapixel sensor.
And they emphasize that the software means this is as good as the Pixel. Right?
Well, but I'm wondering about that because it doesn't have the imaging DSP that the Pixel, the Big Brother Pixel has. So it doesn't have the hardware support. But, of course, that just means probably it does the same things a little bit slower. Dieter Bohn in his Verge review said the camera was almost exactly as good. And that's really what people are buying these Pixels for, the same fingerprint reader on the back. This is a 6-inch screen. This is the Pixel 3a XL. They also have a smaller 5.
Yeah, you can see here. Fairly sizable bezel.
Yeah, but you know what you get with that bezel? Two things. No notch.
Yay!
And a headphone jack.
Yay!
So to be honest, I think, where's the headphone jack?
Oh, that's a good question. Here on top.
It's on the top.
Remember where they used to be there?
Wow, they used to be there. Now they are again. It does make sense to me, not coming out of the bottom, but coming out of the top.
Yeah.
I'm really actually pleased. I wonder, do you think, Kevin, this is kind of a retreat for Google saying, well, maybe that notch thing in the lack of the jack was a mistake?
You follow Apple into your...
At your peril.
Kevin, you're muted. Oh, you're...
I don't think it's a retreat. I think it's an easy way for them to cut cost in terms of design and special parts. I mean, this starts at $399. I think you guys have the XLs. That's $479. I don't think it's a retreat at all. I think they're just trying to get their stock Android devices in people's hands because they just aren't, selling. They only had one carrier for the last couple of years that were selling in stores. Now they've got four or five carriers. And I don't think it's a retreat. I think it's a smart expansion strategy.
Yeah, I think, Kevin, you're right. You go back, I remember when they introduced Android many years ago, the whole strategy was get them in as many hands as possible.
Yeah.
That's why we go open source. We get them everywhere.
It is a little weird. I remember we were all a little bit upset that the Nexus phone program, which was a less expensive pure Google experience, got replaced by the Pixel phones, which is still a pure Google experience, but a feature phone price. And I thought I thought that maybe was kind of contrary to the whole spirit of the Nexus. Maybe they're going back to that. Maybe they will continue to have a low cost.
Well, the thing that struck me most about the keynote yesterday and the day was shrinking the machine learning model from 100 gigs down to half a gig and making that local.
That was impressive, wasn't it?
It's extremely impressive. And by making that local, what's possible in this device is awe-inspiring.
Well, and that was in general, if I were going to pick one thing about the keynote yesterday, it seemed to me that the main point Google was making is, well, yes, we collect a lot of information about you. There's a benefit to that. Ben Thompson talks a little bit about it in his Stratechery column today. Google fights back. There's a benefit for you. And then I loved it that they also said, but we're going to do more and more on device. We're going to give you incognito mode, not just in the browser, but in maps. I think it's an acknowledgement that privacy is an important feature. And I think that for Google to say, we think we can do a great job for you by knowing your information, but we also want to give you the chance to protect yourself. It's not so different from the way Google has always been with data. And they pointed out, they showed the data liberation front and the Google takeout and all that stuff.
It's kind of the it's the obligatory mom and apple pie thing you have to do in every keynote now.
Yeah. Privacy.
You've got to salute the privacy,
privacy and
flag.
Ethics. Ben says, to put it more succinctly, Pichai effectively said, yes, we collect a lot of data, but that data makes amazing things possible.
I think there's a little more to it, though, even. Privacy was one of the main features and factors of the keynote, without a doubt. I don't know that Google was technically capable to deliver what it wanted to deliver and yet still offer more privacy until recently. You know, that machine learning model that Jeff brought up is a great example.
So, I see, Kevin. So because they had to send the data up before. Now that the machine learning is local, they don't have to send the data up.
That's correct.
Right.
It all stays on device. Now the models themselves will go back up in small bits and pieces without data. And again, I don't know that they were ready to deliver that, say, 2, 3, 4 years ago. So it's taken them a long time to
get here.
But now it's kind of like, maybe we're over the hump of the mountain here with privacy, and everything happens on devices, and they just learn from those models that are generated on the devices, not the data.
So Kevin, explain something to me, what you just said, because I missed it as it was going by in the keynote. When there's a machine learning model is down on the phone, it learns and does things. The lessons that it learns, what you're saying is that it's the conclusion that it comes to about a best method that goes back up to improve the machine learning federated, but not your data that goes back up. Is that what you're saying?
That's what
exactly.
They
said that yesterday. They showed a little graphic where they kind of flipped the model, Jeff. Instead of having all of the machine learning happening in the cloud, which is why your data had to go to the cloud, now the machine learning can happen on the phone. Your data stays on the phone, and what it's learned, the conclusion, as you said, from the modeling, goes back to the cloud and gets aggregated as a giant. We'll call it a giant model.
And that's the that's using the word federated in that sense, which means that they have the ability of learning going on in all of these places. It's so impressive. I think that was. I tweeted yesterday that I think we moved from an era of Intel inside to AI inside. That when all of that power is in your device, what it can do. I mean, it was so impressive just with the speed of a conversation, of multitasking and all that. But it goes so far beyond that that it was really, really impressive. I thought that was huge yesterday.
I do wonder, though, and I'm not technical enough to know this, but it sounds as if you we talked a little bit about this during the keynote. You have public data and machine learning occurring on powerful processors, TPUs, perhaps in the cloud, perhaps on machine, generating this data set, which you can then put on the phone in a much reduced size. I think at that point it's static. I what do you think, Kevin? I don't think you're going to be able to add to that data set. You've now created a machine learning. So, for instance, they showed, and it was really impressive, an illiterate Indian woman who was using Google Lens, I guess, to read signs, to tell, to buy railroad tickets. She says, this gives me such freedom. I don't have to ask for somebody to read this for me. It's changed my life. But the technology, that lens technology on that phone, I don't think that could be updated. I have a feeling it could be updated maybe, as a big mass download, but it's not learning anymore.
Well,
it's,
I don't know. That's what they were kind of saying. And what Kevin just said, that's why I caught on this, is that it does learn some things there and federates that back up to the...
Yeah, they showed that mechanism, but I'm not sure if that's the same thing.
What does it mean for machine learning to learn something? Kevin, what do you think?
I can't say I'm technical enough to fully understand it either. My thought process is that the models themselves could be updated. Think about it. They said that they had shrunken down that one machine learning model from 100 gig to half a gig. Half a gig is certainly downloadable, and updates to something that's a half a gig are easily up, downloadable. So I don't know.
But it's not. Here's my point. It's not updatable with information it's gleaning from your phone at this time. So unlike we often hear of assistants that are getting smarter because they're learning your patterns.
Right.
If you have a canned data set, that's not going to be changed in any way. That's a static data set.
You
can have generic stuff uploaded to the cloud. That data set can get better generically, but it's not learning from you at that point.
Understood. But it can send response data from you.
Yeah, but I think that's entirely separate.
Okay, got
because
it.
they want to decouple it from your identity. So I think that's an entirely separate function. So what I think we're saying this. What we're saying is true in both cases, which is that that canned data set is now immutable. It's the way it is. You could download a new one,
but it's
not going to be learning from you particularly.
Right. But Kevin's point is still I think very valid.
Yeah,
is the shrinkage is what enabled them to do the privacy that they did.
Yes. The shrinkage is huge because. Also, these data sets normally are gigantic, and so you couldn't put them on a phone. You couldn't reasonably download them, and you couldn't put them on a phone, and they wouldn't be useful. So I'm not sure what they're doing with that.
I can't say that word anymore, though, because I keep thinking of the Seinfeld episode when you guys say shrinkage. Sorry. It just keeps coming to mind.
It was a little cold yesterday at I.O.
Was it? Yeah. Did they ever hand out that sunscreen? I don't think
we journalists didn't get it. So you see, I got a burn.
Oh, you did get a burn.
I got a burn. And
so I think we've all learned something
and
here.
You can even, see the stripe of the lanyard.
Even during overcast weather, you can still get a sunburn.
I want to go back to Ben Thompson's thing because I think it's important. I tweeted yesterday there were two great goosebump moments. One you just mentioned, which is the illiterate
incredible, and he leads with that as well. The Google
and then the other one was gathering data for those who have trouble with their language.
Wasn't that amazing? Dimitri, who was, I think, both a native Russian speaker and had a speech impediment of some kind, who was, you could kind of understand, but very difficult. But they kind of glossed over this a little bit. But he had us provide 15,000 individual speech samples for this. So it's not...
Well, he's a researcher at Google, so I think he did it to get going.
Yeah. So, this is the Euphonia project. They solicited... They said, if anybody has difficulty communicating with our assistants, g.co/euphonia, we'd love to get more volunteers. But it points up a problem with this, which is it can't be generalized. It's at least specific to that speaker.
You could, yes, but you could say people who stutter... Or people who have MS.
Make it better at non-standard speech. And, of course, the worst, of course, which is people from Scotland. I don't think we'll ever
do
understand.
It. Are you going to do it?
I already insulted Scotland enough.
I think Ben's point here is the one I was thinking of yesterday, too, is it's not just Google fights back. It's the internet fights back. The technologists fight back. I mean, yesterday was filled with moments of look at the good things we can do because we have this technology.
Google has always done that. Apple's always done that.
They did it more, I think, than ever yesterday.
And they certainly had heartwarming moments. Videos were like, wow.
Now, on the other hand, not once did they use the word advertising. The core business model
of the entire corporation didn't get in
there at all. And I found that kind of interesting. But that aside... It was technology saying technology is still okay. It's not evil. It's not ruining the world. It's all right, folks.
Yeah.
And I was glad to see
that. You like that, yeah.
I like that. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Jeff, do you think this is the start of a shift? Because they can't just they've been looking to expand beyond advertising for years. Other Bets is all about that, obviously. When they start getting machine learning models on the device, think about it. And maybe this is a stretch, but... What they showed in the videos is because Gmail knows so much about you, that's why it can help you get a car on your next trip because it's got emails that show you're going somewhere, et cetera. That's all happening through the cloud as well. What if that all moves down to the lowest level of the device and advertising, in a sense, starts to not be Google's number one priority anymore?
It's so much of their revenue. I don't know what the latest number is, and it's hard to imagine them shrinking that much.
Here's what Ben writes about this, which I think is right on. There should be, to be sure, concerns about Google believing their own hype. Many of the problems with YouTube, for example, stem from the Pollyanna-ish assumption that treats technology as an inherent good instead of an amoral force that makes everything, both the positive outcomes and negative ones, easier and more efficient to achieve. At the same time, from a purely strategic perspective, the positive message makes sense. Presuming that everything about technology is bad... is just as mistaken as the opposite. And the fact of the matter is, lots of people like Google products and reminding them of the fact it's Google's long-term benefit. Moreover, and this is the paragraph that's really, I think, seminal, moreover, a world of assistance and machine learning-based products is very much to Google's advantage. The argument to not simply tolerate Google's collection of data, but to actually give them more, is less about some lame case about better targeted ads, but about making actually useful products better. The better targeted ads are a strategy credit, which is what Ben Thompson is.
The whole thing yesterday was that we wanted a useful home? No, a helpful home. Helpful.
Yeah.
So Google's your help.
Google's well aware.
Assistant as helper.
Google's well aware that all of this aids its bottom line. Yeah. But they're smart to focus on the fact that it's also helpful to you. And this is a trade-off you and I have talked about a lot. This is a trade-off I and you and I suspect Kevin are willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of benefit. It started with Google Now cards. Remember that it would know when you got to the airport that you had a flight and it would pop up that card?
Right.
That required looking at your email, knowing your travel plans.
Yeah, and now the fact that you can say, make a car reservation, and it pulls that data in and pre-fills it, it goes way beyond the Now card.
It's really interesting, though, that Google deprecated Now, which perhaps crossed the creepy line in a way that this doesn't, which does the same thing.
This is transactional.
Does the same exact thing. But it's less creepy because you're asking it.
Yes.
And it, well, it just happens to know. I also liked that Google showed how, when in the restaurant recommendations, or the I guess it was the recipe recommendations, where you said, what should I make for dinner? It showed a meal to make, but it showed you below it why Google thought that, where it got that information, based on searches you've made or other recipes you've
made. Which Amazon used to do. They stopped doing it, but they used to do, too.
I think that helps with the creepy factor, too.
Yeah, so I mentioned, so next week my friend David Weinberger's book comes out, Everyday Chaos, and I think that part of the problem we have here is that machine learning is going to be less and less explicable. We're not going to know why it comes to the conclusions it does about us or about the world.
Right, and in fact, it's reductionist to say under that beef bourbon recipe, oh, this is based on your searches. It's based on a hell of a lot more than that, but it makes us feel a little better.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that's just a benign white lie.
Yeah. It could be people who don't care about the climate like you eat a lot of beef.
You know? The truth is we know you have heart disease, buddy, and there's only one possible way. It's from eating a lot of beef bourbon, so have some more. We'll be passing this along to Allstate later. It's so hard with these kinds of events because companies... Besides Microsoft, which somehow just completely fumbled its keynote on Monday, but companies now know how to tug the right heartstrings, how to position their message in a positive way. Apple led the way with this. Apple showed how a keynote can be used to create an incredible halo effect. Sometimes people called that the reality distortion field that Steve Jobs created. And so there is definitely around modern keynotes this sense of, as you come out of this, of this glow of, man, that Google, they're doing great stuff, aren't they? That sometimes takes a while to wear off. Last year it was Google Duplex, and it took a day or two before people said, wait a minute.
But Duplex was back this time.
In a much less...
On a heartwarming use.
So they've learned. They've got a good machine learning model. Maybe we haven't. It hasn't quite worn off yet. But let's attempt to look beyond the reality distortion field and the glow.
It's also nice, refreshing once in a while to look beyond the dystopia.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm very happily living in the Google universe, and go ahead and try not to.
Yeah.
So in a way, I think I'm embracing as most of us do the inevitable.
Kevin, did you hear much yesterday at all? And anything about Chrome OS?
So in the developer keynote, they did talk about developing Android apps. And I wrote up a story afterwards because I installed the new Android Studio on my Pixel Slate.
That's pretty cool that you can run Android Studio on a Chromebook.
Well, I have been doing that.
You have Linux.
As soon as Christini came out and they said all new Chromebooks coming out this year will have Linux out of the box, which because that's a big feature right now. So I've been running lots of different coding development environments on Christini. And
is this new way that they're talking about different from what you've been doing?
They created a one-click install for it, which is fine. You know, I mean, I've got a screenshot of it. It's just, it downloads a Debian package, which using the Files app in Chrome OS, you can just say install with Linux, and that's okay.
You don't have to have Linux set up already. You don't have to Christini set up already, or do you?
It has to be enabled. It does have to be enabled, or that's not going
to
work.
But the difference is you don't have to go into, these days, you don't go into developer mode to do that. You don't have to downgrade your security or any of that.
Yeah, they made it slightly easier. And quite honestly, if you're developing Android apps, they certainly wasn't hard.
You should know how to do it. Yeah.
You should know how to do that and a little more. But here's what kind of irks me. In fact, I'm going to share something a little personal here, because this afternoon I was quite upset and thinking about selling my Pixel Slate. Because with this new Android Studio preview, specifically for Chrome OS, they list recommended Chromebooks. And the Pixel Book and the Pixel Slate are not on there. And that's because of the CPUs inside.
It's a Y-series CPU.
They're the Y-series CPUs. And that's really disheartening for me. Even though I'm not an Android developer, I'm thinking ahead here. I'm taking, you know, programming classes, and I assume I'm going to move on to Android development at some point. So I'm a little distraught about this. A couple Chrome boxes are recommended, and two Chromebooks right now, two or three.
Does the older Pixel Book, like the one Jeff's staring at, does that support it? Is that a U processor?
That's a Y series as well. That's a seventh gen.
So your $1,000 plus Pixelbook cannot be used.
It's not that it can't be used. It's not recommended.
Oh, okay. Is it too slow?
I got it. That's the thing so far. And I don't know if it's just because it's a preview version of Android Studio or it's because I'm using a Y series processor in my Chromebook, but it was pretty laggy.
And so eight gigs. So the minimum they require 8 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of space on the disk. 1280 by 800 screen resolution. The real key here is the i5 U series or higher. And right now, there's only five Chromebooks they recommend: the Yoga 630, the Acer Spin 13, the HP X30 and G2, and the Acer Chromebox CX i3. So
those are two Chromeboxes, not even Chromebooks. So,
Well, it is a development environment, honestly. I mean,
how many people are doing it, but still.
I think why I'm slightly upset was when they said back in November that Android Studio would be officially supported on Chromebooks. You know, of course, they were showing it on the Pixelbook. So I think many people took away like, yeah, it's the flagship device. It's going to support this. Lots of Android or Google people have these Pixelbooks, but it's not on there for an understandable reason. But I'm thinking
if you sell it, what would you get?
Not what I paid.
What would you buy in its place? I understand.
He's so bitter, Kevin is.
It's
so
not
bitter.
What I paid for it, that's for sure. Well, that's true. I know that. Yeah.
So I looked at some of the recommended ones, and I'm well aware of those devices. You know, I write about them and all. And, you know, they're going to cost me, it's going to cost me anywhere from $600 to $800, maybe $900 to replace this.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It's not like.
Would you get the Spin?
Yeah, the Spin is one. Dell makes one, but they only have an i3.
Yeah.
Lenovo is a little too big
for
my case.
That's pretty high specs, 8 gigs of RAM and an i5U processor.
They should have at least high specs. It's surprising how many don't go above 4 gigs.
Yeah.
And 8 gigs is nice to have. Even 8 gigs can get sluggish at times.
Yeah. You can spec up quite a few of them at 8 gigs, but I mean, you know, it's going to have a Celeron in it, you know, or a Pentium. Those are capped out, you know, tapped out at 4. The M3s occasionally come with 8 gig, but mostly it's a Core i5 or Core i3, Core i7. Those are the 8 gig or more capable. I don't know.
Is it just speed or is there an issue with maybe emulation or hypervisor kind of what are they? Are they still doing just a cheroot with Crostini?
So it's
running like on the it's running bare to the metal, right? It's not an emulator.
No, it's actually a VM inside a container inside a VM, and for that reason, this is another downer for real Android developers. I am not one, of course. There's no Android virtual devices, no device emulation.
Well, that's a drawback because you'd like to be able to try it in an emulator before
it is. Yeah. I mean, you can certainly connect your Android device via USB to the Chromebook and push your app or run your app on that phone or device. But unless you've got every device, you know, that's out there, you certainly want a virtual emulated device.
By the way, I this is why I love geeks so much. Kevin said, I think I'm going to get personal here. And I think, oh, you know, his dog has the flu. Right?
Oh, Norm has the flu?
No, it's I've got a Y processor.
Oh, yep. Man, you got a Y processor.
A Y processor.
So
oh,
sorry.
Man, I'm sorry.
Condolences,
oh,
man.
Are there Hallmark cards for that?
No, but you know what? That might be a good startup, Jeff.
So I'm going to guess it has something to do with the virtual machine and support for the virtual machine, the Y processor, this the U processor is missing in the Y. But I don't know, but I wonder. Might be something that
I don't think so.
Do you think it's just speed?
I think it's just, power, essentially, because, you know, those Y processors can handle up to about 5 to 7.5 watts of heat, and then the other ones are 15, so they can run longer under load, and when you're developing, you need horsepower, so I get it.
Yeah, just go get a computer.
Oh, I have a review unit of the Spin.
Okay, now get a Chromebook. Get a computer, and put Linux on it.
What's a computer?
I see this all the time, especially with iPad users, where they're just struggling, and Chromebook users a little bit too.
Hey,
where they're just struggling, and I just get a freaking computer.
Leo's using his PDP-8.
I have an 11 in the studio. Excuse me, please. And put Linux on it, and all will be well. And it probably won't cost you as much, and you'll get more horsepower and all of that stuff. I mean, I think you could be a little dogmatic in this.
Yeah, we can. Mm-hmm.
And if you're a developer, you probably have to have a Chromebook because you want to see if your Android app mm-hmm. will run mm-hmm. well on a Chromebook. It'll look good on that screen and all that stuff.
I wish more companies would test against Chrome OS.
Yeah.
It's obvious a lot of them don't.
You don't need a Chromebook if you're one of those developers because there is a Chrome OS emulator in Android Studio.
See?
So.
Yeah. And that'll run on Linux and Windows and Mac OS, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, as I
still don't use it enough.
Get a computer. they did rebrand all of the Google Home stuff. It's all now Nest under Rick Osterloh.
Right.
Did you ask Rick about that? Is that
that's good for him, right?
Oh,
yeah. No, he's happy about that. They're not going to throw out boxes that are out there now. It's going to be a gradual rebrand. But as they do new things, they'll go to Nest. I think it's this whole notion of helpful. Google is your helpful assistant now.
It's your helpful assistant.
And the helpful
home. Your little plastic pal who's there to serve you.
Yeah. It's yours. You know, if you go back, how many years ago did we all talk about how you're all going to have your own agents?
Yeah. Right?
Well, now you do.
Right? Yeah.
Now you have these things that know you.
I have to say, you know, I have a Ring video doorbell. I have outdoor cams from Nest. I have a variety of devices in the house. And I'm now, maybe it's psychological because of the Nest brand or because they all work together, but I'm thinking of replacing it with the Nest doorbell.
Oh.
Right? Because I know I want to get the home, what do they call
Max
it?
Max Hub.
Nest Hub Pax.
Max Hub.
The next Maxi Hub. whatever they call that. Because that sounds great, but. And by the way, this is sneaky as heck, because remember the original Google Home Hub didn't have a camera.
Right.
This one has a camera. So they said right at the beginning, for your living room.
So I was standing next to Rick when he was talking to me about this. So he said, no, this is probably for the kitchen or maybe the living room. And I said, yeah, not the bedroom for this one. He said, I would, but that's me. I'm eager for it.
What it does, though, is it gives you all the benefits of the Nest in cameras, which is it can it'll notify you if it doesn't recognizes people.
Right.
So in effect, you're getting a Nest Cam plus
exactly.
the screen plus
exactly.
a good speaker. I think it looks for $299 like a very
it looks very nice
or $250 rather.
I played with $249 I think yeah. And the two biggest I think hands at the keynote yesterday, at least when I was in the audience, were being able to stop the music with your hand.
But you have to talk
to the hand.
Now, it was a little unclear in the keynote. Do you have to train it to do
no,
that?
No,
does
no,
it have
no.
to recognize
I
you?
I did it.
You
right?
just
so
did
you
it.
Just, and it has to recognize you're looking at it.
Ah.
Because it doesn't want to just take any old hand and suddenly stop.
Oh.
So it recognizes that someone, doesn't have to be you, someone is looking at it and does that.
The other advantage with the camera is you can have duo integration. So now you can make, it's like a Facebook portal.
Facebook portal, exactly. Yeah. And the other ooh from the audience was alarm going off. Stop.
Which
that was everybody loved that, right?
That works now, which is wonderful.
It does.
You tried it this morning.
Absolutely.
That is funny how of all the things they announced, that probably was the number one most tweeted and commented
on.
Yeah.
Everybody loved that.
Just so when your alarm's going off, instead of having to say, hey, Google, cancel or stop, you could just stop.
I'm waiting for the stories that'll come out that having to say, hey, Google, made you wake up enough you'd actually get up.
Now you can just go,
now you can just stop and fall back asleep and you'll blame Google.
Or worse, wave your hand. So this video messages, they touched on that. Is that a feature in Duo? I don't remember the video. Can you leave a video message in Duo?
Think so. Yes.
You can.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think much more useful, though, to have this on the living room screen mm-hmm. where you come in and you see there's messages for you. And you could, by voice command, say, play them back. And it's on a screen. It's right there. You'd have to pull out your phone. I think that's kind of interesting.
I don't know why this feels like a little bit of a leap, but it does.
It does seem like something new. Video message from Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the smaller version of this.
You have the Lenovo or the...
Well, no. I have two of the, what they used to call the Google Home Hub, the 7-inch, which is now the...
Oh, I love mine, but it doesn't have a camera.
Correct, which is why we have one in the bedroom, yep. and we have one right here on my desk.
It's my alarm clock. It's right next to my bed.
Right.
And it's great. It gets dark when you turn out the lights.
Yep.
I love the slideshow because it's all my Google Photos, so it's stuff I haven't seen that in years.
And it's the right size for a night table.
Just the right size.
The bigger one is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, the bigger one we have, which is a Lenovo 10-inch smart display, that is in our kitchen, right on the kitchen island. So every morning we have coffee, my wife and I together, and watch the local news on YouTube TV right on the display.
On your Lenovo?
Oh, yeah, that's been there since day one.
Wow. And that's big enough for you to watch TV with that.
Did you also have a TV set, as we used to call them, in your kitchen?
TV set?
No.
I'm the former TV guy critic. This is how we talk.
Former TV set critic. Does it have does it come with little rabbit ears? Is that part of the set? And matching hairbrush?
Yeah, but what they added, which I love, I haven't seen it live yet, is a YouTube TV guide on this, so it actually really is more like a little TV set now. Now we just say, hey, I won't say is the G word, but watch.
We call him
NBC.
Guillermo here. Is it
Guillermo.
Hey, Guillermo. Yeah.
We just tell it to watch NBC in the morning and watch our local news, and it just fires up YouTube TV to the right channel. But if you don't know what's on, you don't know what channel to tune to. So in the middle of the day, it's like, well, what do I watch?
I presume your agent's going to recommend things. The assistant's going to recommend things to you as well based on your...
It already does. In YouTube TV has recommendations based on that. I don't know about the assistant.
Here's more terrorist video for you. Yeah.
You're not radicalized enough. Perhaps you'd like to watch more. One of the things that happens at these keynotes, this reality distortion field, is Google shows a lot of stuff that isn't yet a product. And they don't, I don't think they did a very good job yesterday of distinguishing.
Well, last year was worse, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think they've showed that many new things yesterday in a way.
Okay.
What was
Do you feel
not
like
real?
That everything there was something you'll be able to do? I mean, obviously you can't get the Nest Home Max
summer.
Until summer, but
that's hardware. That's easy.
That's hardware. I mean, was there
Here's anything? The question. What I don't know is the 100 gig to half a gig ML.
Is that real?
Is that real now? No. Is that multitasking ability, what did they show you? They showed you could multitask, do complex tasks, and...
Oh, that thing, the contextual. They've been slowly building up towards that with Assistant all
right,
along.
Right, so that
how real
stuff,
is that? How real is that?
That's not on your phone yet, I don't think.
I don't think that is yet, but I'm just checking their blog post because they talk about shrinking the model down. It's coming. This is all part of the next generation Assistant. So
this fall in the new phones, basically.
In the new Pixel phones this year. So
the Pixel
roughly
4.
October, this will presumably be a live product for Pixel phones.
They've said that before and not delivered,
yes,
I want to point out. So, okay.
Well, and then was it 2 years ago we got Allo? right, and we got those things that they did deliver and nobody gave a crap
He started
about.
Off, it's funny, with what looked like inbox because he started talking about smart replies. Yeah. And I thought, too soon, Sundar, too soon.
So exactly. I've recognized myself with smart replies. I guess I'm too much of an editor. When it suggests something to me, I'll be like, damn, I'm not using that. I'm going to make up something else.
You blue pencil it? Yeah. Well, okay, put this here. And that would be a nice feature, by the way, if you could blue pencil your smart reply. Yeah. There is on the keyword blog, Aparna Chennapurgada, who gave the speech on this about search in the demo, has a long piece that basically is your entire talk. So that's nice that they did that. So you can read all of these features. Here's the menu translation.
So
that's going to be this fall?
I think so.
The new lens? That's really sweet.
Low many years ago, when I wrote "What Would Google Do," which led me to being here,
you called it.
I argued that there was going to be a smart menu that was going to use the data of the restaurant to tell you what the most popular dishes were and what people had with what, and so on and so forth. And finally,
it's real.
The googly menu is here.
They missed a bet, though. It'd be nice to have an augmented reality version of the meal. Well,
they said it would.
They will.
Yeah. They're gonna pop up. Yeah.
Pictures, but I want to see it on
the table. Yeah. No.
There is, I think it's on a cruise ship. There's a restaurant that projects the meal on your table.
Oh, Jesus.
And then the waiters come and put it there. Yeah, I think it's on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship. It's gimmicky.
No,
it's a bad idea. I like the translate. I thought what they showed, but we've seen this. This is not new, the ability to translate.
No, I've used it.
Yeah.
It gets better and better and better.
So even though they announced some new features in Lens, if it's coming in the next generation phone, that's fine. Maybe it does require the new hardware in the Pixel 4 or whatever they call it to do exactly what you were talking about, but those smaller models and all of that.
The thing that I think was most BS yesterday, because I've lived through this, is the AR magazine page. Just point your phone at this magazine page, and the magazine page will come alive. And you'll be happy you have magazines again.
It's the QCAT all over again.
Yeah.
All you need is a special piece of hardware. And you can scan the magazine QR code, and a giant tiger will appear.
A shark.
They actually mentioned a magazine and AR with Lens in the blog post. If you see a dish you'd like to cook in an upcoming issue of Bon Appetit, you'll be able to point your camera at a recipe and have the page come to life and show you exactly how to make it.
It's not AR, though. This is they just have a video, basically, of the preparation.
Well, that's true. It's not.
It's not. It's not.
No, I think
pointing
you're
at the table.
Print. I think you're pointing at the
print. Do
you? Yeah, I think so.
Not that it matters.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, we're talking gimmicks here.
That's dumb.
The thing I think is interesting is when they showed the shark and having the shark in, you know, on the stage and walking around, it made me think of, this is what they wanted to do with glass. This is what a heads-up display eventually
And give credit to Zuckerberg. He promoted the notion of the value of your camera on your phone for AR long before Google did.
Right. So we have the hardware. I mean, Apple's doing this. Google's doing this. You can have, Iron Man or what's his name? Danny Glover Jr. Childish Gambino, you know, now in the room with you, or a shark. So it does.
I was hoping for some VC jokes. There's a VC on the stage.
Look at those teeth. Yeah. Reminds me of our investors. Dun-dun. All right, let's take a little break. Kevin Toefel's here from aboutchromebooks.com and Stacy's IoT podcast. Well, it's his and Stacy's. Always a pleasure to have you. I just want to be clear, does not have the flu.
No.
You have a Y processor, but Norm.
I was trying to think of something that wouldn't happen. Dogs don't get the flu. So I didn't want to have the animal running away or something. So I actually spent 4 minutes thinking of what undoable catastrophe could befall him.
And Norm
would be equal
in
a normal person to having a Y processor.
Wow.
Norm has a U processor. I have a Y processor.
There you go. Norm is running on full. And also, of course, from the the New Art School of Journalism. I'm going to call it that from now on. I know I am. From the Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. it is Mr. Jeff Jarvis in studio, which we really are thrilled to have you here. Thank you for making the trip up. Our show today brought to you by Casper. If you want to take a little nap on our Casper after the show, be my guest.
Oh.
I'm not supposed to talk about it yet, but a new Casper in the box, ready to open. For years, we've had the original Casper mattress, not many, many years, a couple of years now. We love it. It's combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that gives you something kind of almost paradoxical, just the right sink and just the right bounce. It's both firm and soft. So your hips don't, you know, dig into a firm mattress, but your back is fully supported and it's breathable. So you never get hot. You regulates your temperature throughout the night, and we know that that helps sleep. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses. And the brilliant insight that the guys at Casper came up with when they founded the company was there is a huge markup when you buy a mattress at a mattress store, as much as double the price of that, the actual price of that mattress. Sometimes even more. They said, well, what if we eliminated the mattress store? We sent it directly to the customer, cutting the cost of showrooms, resellers, and pass that savings on to you. Brilliant, right? There was one problem. People said, well, I want to lie on it before I buy it. Well, as you probably know, I know this because I've bought mattresses that just did not work out. I lay on them in the mattress showroom, but 10 minutes in bright light during the day with a salesperson looking at you, that's no good. That's no, you can't even spoon with your wife. You can't do anything. You can't really test it. So Casper gives you the chance to test it, but in your house for 100 nights, do whatever you want on it. And free shipping, but also, if you don't like it, free returns and a 10-year limited warranty. These mattresses last a long time, and if for any reason in those first 100 nights you say, nah, it's not the right mattress for me, they'll come, they'll take it, give you every penny back. So it's easy to buy online, and it's completely risk-free. And frankly, it's a better way to try a mattress. Get it in its environment. And they come in a really compact box. It's actually kind of fun when you open it up. It includes everything you need to open up the box. It goes, it expands. Smells great from day one. I've had mattresses that you've had to air out for days before you could sleep on them. Casper's awesome. Get a Casper mattress today. And we have a special deal. I want to emphasize this. This is new. It was $50. It's now $100 off towards select mattresses at casper.com/twig. But that is a limited time offer. They told me you can't keep talking about it. So this is it. $100 off, but you have to use the offer code TWIG at checkout. We really love Casper. They've been with us practically since the beginning. Casper.com/twig. Thank you, Casper, for your support. And thank you, our fair listeners. If you use the offer code TWIG, you'll save $100 and you'll let them know you heard it here, which we appreciate. Terms and conditions apply. Casper, Casper.com/twig.
Buying a mattress used to be the next worst thing from buying a car.
Yeah.
The mattresses, mattresses were exactly the same.
Yeah.
But there were always different brands and different names on them. So
you want
undercoating
on that mattress? What about Rust Guard?
You can't comparison shop mattresses.
No.
Now you can know what you're getting.
That's really a good thing to do.
See, the internet does good things.
Yeah.
See what it makes possible.
Yeah. How did I get to this story?
I have no idea.
How we search for bow wows and meows.
How did you get here?
It's... What is this? Is a Google blog? Why do cats like boxes? Why do dogs lick, eat grass, howl? Why global pet preferences worldwide? Google any information at all? Google wants to know. I don't know how I got here.
What did you get to this? Well, go use your back button.
I typed keyword blog, and that's what I found.
Oh.
let's go back. Is there anything else from I/O? No, I/O's not over. Okay, they've updated Android Auto.
Kevin, you want to talk about that first?
Which was that, Jeff?
Android Auto changes.
So Android Auto, in fact, this is something that's coming by the end of this month. The new, I think it's called Drive Mode for Android. If you're using your phone in your car and you're connected to, if you're using your phone in your car, this is not specific to Android Auto.
It's the auto app on Android.
Right. So what they're doing
is... call Android Auto.
Right.
Yes. So what they're doing is when you're using navigation and you get maybe a phone call that comes in or a song changes from one song to the next, and so you want to see the title, that information is just down below at the bottom. It does not supersede the navigation maps that you can see all the time, which is wonderful because I like to see the maps. I don't want to switch between apps and not see the app or the map for a little while I'm driving, even though the directions still work. I like to see the map for some reason. I'm just weird. So there's that aspect, and that's coming by the end of this month. And then Android Automotive, which is what they're basically building into some cars, I think, and I could be wrong.
Polestar is that.
Yeah, Polestar is a perfect example. And then there are other vehicle manufacturers that either are using it or plan to use it. That's kind of like the whole infotainment system. Everything just runs on Android Automotive. Now, I did hear, and I was curious about this, does that preclude you from using, say, CarPlay? If you're an iOS user, maybe you've got iOS and Android in the car. And apparently it does not. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Almost everybody gets both, right? There's very few cars that just...
Yeah, but I don't know with Volvo, now that in the Polestar from Volvo, Android is the OS of all of the UI in the car.
That's a different matter. That's not Android Auto. That's no. That's the OS.
For
the
car. That's how you get your entertainment.
Automotive. Okay.
Right.
So now we have Android Auto for your phone, Android Auto for your car, Android Automotive for your car.
Yes.
If that weren't confusing enough. Okay. there is a new UI for the Android Auto on the screen in your car.
Right, which is nicer. And Kevin made the point that
you use this, right?
I'm going to tell you a story in a second.
Okay.
But the other point is that if you do go to a full app, then the directions come at the bottom of the screen. So you never you're always multitasking.
Oh, that's nice. On your phone.
They redid the UI, very pretty, except that. Have I mentioned this before? I hate night mode. I hate it. I just don't like it. They're making it basically default now.
On Q.
On next Android Auto.
Not just Android Auto, but it's going to also be a feature in Q.
I hate it. Well, feature okay, because if I can ignore it, but I hate it as default. So here's the thing. So, because I live la vida Google.
Why do you hate the dark mode?
I don't know. It really
bugs me. Because you're so white. Seriously. Everybody in the world wants dark mode.
I don't.
He's getting pink.
Jeff, you're dressed in dark
mode. Jeff's wardrobe is dark mode.
Right.
You are dark mode.
I like contrast.
Okay. No, it's funny because everybody was all excited about dark mode on Mac OS with Mojave. I turned it on and I don't like it either. I turned it off. I went back.
I don't feel like on the car.
It's better, as they pointed out yesterday, it's better on an OLED screen to be in dark mode. You use less battery.
Fine. But it's in the car. It's plugged in.
Yeah. You don't care about that.
I'm shrieking. So here's the thing. Because I am on this show and because I thus live la vida Google.
Yes.
I do everything Google-ish that I can do.
Yes.
So I bought my Mazda CX-5.
Yes.
It did not come with Android Auto.
Oh.
Then the retrofit was possible.
Oh, good.
It was the Mazda retrofit, right? So they put it in there. $600 later,
yeah.
I'm pissed.
Why?
It doesn't work well. It crashes all the time. It'll reboot. It'll just go off four times in a drive. And then the weird thing is the UI.
Do you think that's specific to your Mazda?
Maybe this one. I don't know what it is. I'm gonna have to go back in, but it just irritates me. But then the other weird thing is the UI is not well thought through at all. So I'm listening to Sirius,
right?
And then I plug in the phone. And so then it goes to Audible.
Yeah.
Starts playing my book. No, I don't want Audible now.
Yeah.
But I before it does anything, I have to go to the map, to Waze, turn that on. Then I go back to Sirius. Then it will go back to the audiobook. But now this time, when I do it a second time, I can get Sirius and Waze.
It's a work
time.
In progress.
Is it ever?
And I don't know if that's Mazda specific. I think that is a little bit Android Auto. Yeah.
The crash.
I don't have a lot of I don't have a lot of experience with Android Auto. We had it when we were in Hawaii on vacation, and I did find it a little annoying. I thought CarPlay actually was easier. But Kevin, you said you like Android Auto.
I do. I use both Android Auto and CarPlay. I don't really have too many problems with it. But then again, we're all doing different tasks, so I don't. You know, who knows?
Kevin is basically always listening to the Beatles, so it's pretty obvious that when you get in the car, just keep playing the Beatles. There's not a lot of.
18 on Sirius XM.
Yep. Pop up channel 18 and you're done.
Is that movie about the only guy on Earth
yesterday.
Who goes to Beatles?
Did you see it yet?
Yesterday, I did not. I was exhausted from yesterday with I.O., so I did not see it yet.
Danny Boyle's new movie.
I can't wait.
Universe in which the Beatles... Actually, it's not till June, so...
Oh.
The universe in which the Beatles never existed, except some guy, for some reason, remembers them. And since he's the only one that does, suddenly he is, they think, creating the Beatles songs in real time.
And brilliant.
Brilliant. It's a great idea for a movie.
It is. It's fun.
Yes.
Kevin, that's Kevin's dream is to be that guy, I think.
I know all the Beatles oeuvre.
Do you know all the songs, Kevin?
I don't. I would say I'm pretty familiar with all the songs.
So start reciting Eleanor Rigby.
Oh, that's easy. No, that's easy.
That's why I put
there are obscure Beatles songs, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Eleanor Rigby.
What's the most obscure Beatles song?
Well, it's so obscure, I don't remember it.
Okay. All
right. What would you say, Kevin? I have a friend who's like you, a Beatle maniac. He calls himself a Beatleologist. He's even written a book about the Beatles.
But wow.
That's as bad a job title as
a Beatle collection of like lunch boxes and paper bow ties and hats and all sorts of stuff they sold over the years. But he, when challenged, he says, well, I bet you don't know everybody. And he somehow comes up with a song I never heard of. So there are a few. Anyway.
Yeah, there's a few.
Google Assistant was much faster on stage. Do you think that's an example of something that maybe won't be as fast in real life. They say it's going to be 10 times faster.
But this is the point of having the model down.
That's the model on the phone. This is the model on the phone.
Yes. So we'll see. And the processors are only going to get faster and faster. So it started showing me what it could be like. I mean, I don't talk a lot to devices yet. I think you both do more.
Yeah, but it's funny because both Microsoft and Google will show these contextual conversations that go on and on. We'll move him to Friday. Now, what do I have on Thursday? And I don't ever want to operate in a world like that. That is not how I work. Maybe we're just not busy executives.
Yeah, I use voice for interaction with my devices. I mean, it's even built in. The assistant's built into Chromebooks. You can have it always listening on your Chromebook, in fact. I use it every day, multiple times a day, but not, you know, where I'm doing six different things. You know, I do it for one thing and I go.
That was a little manic, to be honest with you.
It was to prove a point and show an example. When you get rid of the latency of a connection and then the cloud and all the other things that has to do off the device, I'm not surprised it's 10x faster. I mean, if it's all happening there.
Yeah.
And speaking to Jeff's point about hardware getting faster, you know, Google already has custom chips in these things for the photography, for security with the Titan M. It would not surprise me if they come up with a TensorFlow Lite chip.
I was wondering if you had TensorFlow in the phone, it would be phenomenal.
That would be interesting.
We said this yesterday. You can already install TensorFlow on a Raspberry Pi. It's not like you need a power-hungry chip.
Well, and there are almost all the modern phones, including Apple's, come with dedicated processing for machine learning. So I think that we are actually already starting to enter that era. But boy, there is nobody. Google seems to have an insurmountable lead in this. Done this for so long. They say Google Assistant is now on 1 billion devices. By the way, Android on 2.5 billion active devices. That's double what Apple touted a couple of weeks ago.
Android Auto is on 100 million.
Yeah. But having Assistant on a billion devices means you're collecting data devices all the time.
It's okay.
No, it's good. It's good.
That's how the models get better faster.
Yeah, and I do think Google does a lot to anonymize that data, not recording. Just as Apple, they're really taking a page from Apple's playbook. Apple doesn't record the beginning and ends of trips, just middle parts that are less identifiable. Things like that to anonymize.
What I call on Twitter, we now have the Google Maps Ashley Madison feature. Which is incognito and maps.
Only you thought of that right away, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. An interesting use of incognito and maps. You're right. Why else would you want
Why
to
else?
Hide
yeah.
where you're going?
Yeah. What?
Because this is the one they always give, which is such BS. I'm going to buy a gift for my wife, and I don't want her to know that I'm headed to Tiffany.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, you're going to hear very soon the CIA. If you turn on incognito on the maps, that's when they want you.
Well, people always said that if you use PGP to encrypt your email, that's a sign you're guaranteed to be in the Prism database.
When the Guardian went through the whole Snowden story, they thought, okay, we got to get burner phones. They said, nope. If you're using burner phones, that's the giveaway.
Dead giveaway.
Yep.
And it's not like they can't spy on you with a burner phone.
Right.
All right. So,
anything else, Kevin?
What else should we say? I just want to make sure that we don't miss any big things. Did they talk Android Q? Yeah, we should talk about Android Q. Dark mode.
Yeah. Oh, that.
Dark mode finally here. Jeff Jarvis has been begging for this. I haven't yet put Q on my Pixel 3. It was, I have the beta, but I just haven't downloaded it yet. Has anybody tried it, played with it? Beta 3 is out now.
I do have it, and it was actually after I saw that video that you had on the screen a second ago from The Verge.
I will show it.
Maybe, was that their review, or was that the first look?
I think it's their first look, yeah.
Yeah, once I saw that, I got the Q3 beta going. It took a little while to download. I'm sure a lot of people were hitting the servers last night. So far, I like it. It's actually very iOS-like, and I actually am a iOS iPhone user primarily, to be honest.
And that's because of the gestures, the swiping, and all of that?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm a dark mode, all the things kind of person myself, unlike Jeff. And I turn that on, and it doesn't work for every single app.
That's where I really, and I agree with Jeff on that. When an app is not in dark mode, it blinds you.
It's like, but there is a, and I saw this on 9to5 Google today, you can go into the developer options of your phone, which I have enabled, and you can force dark mode even on apps that don't use it. And now I have total dark mode.
Nice. I do like dark mode in the settings panel. I think that that being dark is good.
It just matches your mood these days.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
about
it?
About the internet.
We're in a dark mood.
The other thing, that, back to your Phantomware point before, last year they announced this year they announced it again, and they still don't have it, which is the Google Maps walking, follow the arrow.
They showed it, didn't they?
They showed it again. They said it's coming out.
Now, they said you could use it at I.O. Did you try it?
No, I see. That's what I thought. And it was no. All they did at I.O. was a simple AR. You had to go and you had to scan a map.
It would show the booths.
That's where the snacks are, right?
They didn't walk you around.
They didn't walk you around. And I'm dying for that because I feel like I look like an absolute idiot.
Well, you live in Manhattan, so that means you walk a lot. So walking directions are important.
It's good for you. You ought to do that.
But, well, a lot of us don't live in areas where you're going to walk to anything, and so that's less important. I know when I'm visiting a city, though, I love walking directions.
But it just drives you nuts because you're trying to get oriented, and I'll go a block out of the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do that every time in New York. I go downtown instead of uptown, and then finally I realize, oh, I'm walking the wrong way.
Right.
I have to turn around.
Of course.
I tried it out yesterday on my OG Pixel, and it worked.
It works. So it's in Maps now.
Oh, it is now.
Maps now.
Oh.
It is in Maps now.
Really?
Yeah. I walked, I walked to Burger King with a little thing.
Did you have to admit that?
It's not a very far walk either. So it is now on Pixel smartphones. They say it's launched yesterday.
Oh,
on Google Pixel smartphones.
Should we try this?
So, how do you get into it? Is there an obvious button that you press?
Just do walking directions.
Okay.
On a
so we're going from here to Burger King. Or going to Elroy's.
Elroy's is better than Burger King, but it's a longer walk.
That's okay. So, directions.
We're going to lose Jeff for about 2 hours now while he walks to the burrito truck and back.
Start AR. Ooh, I missed it. Oh, shoot.
So start there is AR. A button. This is
there's a button that says start AR.
Oh, it even shows
early
you. Oh, this
preview.
Is great.
Yeah, don't sue us when you walk into a sewer.
Give
be safe.
Phone to Leo, so I can
here,
show it.
Put it over here.
I'm trying.
Allow. This is good. So in order to get to Elroy's right now,
first you have to scan the buildings across from you.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh,
it doesn't work.
It's got to orient.
Excuse me, I'll go outside for a minute.
It's got to orient. That's so weird. Well, go ahead. Go outside. Jeff will be right back.
Yeah, the weird thing is it has to orient on a building.
Like that's interesting. Scan. Well, that's what you're trying to do, right? When you're trying to figure out, do I go uptown or downtown? Do I turn left or right? So the problem is you don't have any information about what those buildings are supposed to be or which is left and which is right. So now, does it recognize your insides? Kevin, no. Yeah, you have to go outside.
No, it's like looking for buildings.
Yeah, so Jeff has gone out to the front of the studio, and he's going to scan the buildings. I wonder how helpful that's going to be.
Oh, I think it's helpful, but I don't know that a phone is the best thing.
No,
this is
what you get when you've been doing Street View for 10 years, and you have the front of every building in America. It's kind of remarkable, really, that they can do this. Did it work?
Yes.
Did you scan the buildings?
It's done.
It does. It worked. It now knows that I should go out the door and turn right. It's pointing the direction I should go. Look at that. That's pretty cool.
Very nice.
So it goes into map mode when I'm not pointed at the real world.
Oh.
And then if I tip it up and point at the real world, it goes into augmented reality world. So turn left at the teachers, it looks like. Yeah, there they are. Oh, that's really neat.
That is neat. Yay.
Okay.
Good catch.
Thank you, Google.
Karsten, good work.
Thank you, Google. Karsten.
Harvard.
Thank God he loves his Whoppers. That's all I can say.
The title of his autobiography would be From Harvard to Burger King.
I just want them to have that Impossible Whopper.
Oh, yeah. Do they have it yet?
They don't have it yet.
No. Oh, you've been asking?
I checked.
Doesn't Carl's Jr. have it already?
He's
Castle.
He's the John Hine of Twit.
Who's John
Hine? John Hine did Jump the Shark. He's on the Howard Stern show now. The producer there, and he wrote a junk food book.
Oh, yeah. There's the, that's a guaranteed bestseller.
I'm actually more of a Taco Bell guy.
Honestly, Elroy's is 10 times better than Taco Bell, and I love it that our local taco truck parks across the street from Taco Bell in Petaluma, hoping that people will go, I could go to Taco Bell, or I could go to Elroy's.
Oh, there's one more from yesterday.
One more thing.
Is, and I think they've kind of said this before, but bringing two-factor to your phone as the device.
I thought that was great. Your phone is actually the unlock device. I'm not sure how that's different from the approve deny thing that we have now.
Well, you have to just hit one button, and yeah, I'm not exactly sure either. But
it's just, I think it's just a little easier. You don't have to tap the screen to approve it.
Okay, nice proximity. Like
they're trying to push two factor as much as they can.
You know, the email server that we advertise, the Helm email server, does authentication through Bluetooth LE proximity. So somebody, you can't create a password for an account unless you have the Helm application on your phone and you are within Bluetooth LE proximity of the Helm server, which I think is a brilliant way to authenticate. Because if you're not standing next to the server, you can't authenticate. I think that's really smart.
By the way, we earlier said that the Home Hub Maxi, whatever, was $249.
It's $229.
$229.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good price.
It is.
They did mention folding phones, which I... Yeah. We couldn't... Kevin and I couldn't help but...
Chortle
a little. Pickles. Since the only folding phones we know about are kind of... well, at least the Galaxy is not
Borked,
doing so well.
I think is the title.
Yeah. Borked. All right,
I think we've done I.O.
We did I.O. There were a couple of things, though, I was wondering if Google would talk about, and now they've slipped my mind.
Stadia was one I was hoping for, but with the E3 gaming conference next month, I can see why they haven't talked about it.
Not one word about Stadia. Wasn't that interesting?
They had a demonstration hub in the press room.
So you could play it?
You could play with it, yeah.
How about... progressive web apps. They probably have a track on that.
They mentioned it a couple times in the demos about how they bring up the PWA.
Okay.
I went to some.
Yeah. I'm excited by that because it means it's a kind of a cross-platform development that'll be very good for Chromebooks as well as mobile devices.
So there was a protest plane over.
Did you see it?
And its message made no sense.
Not unusual. Let's see. Here's a picture of the banner. Google control is not
privacy.
Privacy.
Save local news. What?
What? Google control is not privacy. Save local news.
Makes no sense.
I don't know what privacy has to do with local news at all.
Exactly. I think it's some unemployed journalist with a flying license.
So there's an article about it in TechCrunch, but nobody seems to have figured out. Wouldn't be so hard to figure out who it is and why. But
it was just assumed. They timed it well. Just assumed Sundar began.
Really?
There wasn't a plane.
Huh. Yeah. It's a head scratcher, folks. It's definitely not going to galvanize local action.
So the other thing about this. So this year they decided that this was going to be the carless I.O. So you had to literally drive to San Jose.
Oh, yeah. They didn't want you to... Even though there's plenty of parking outside Shoreline, it's designed for concerts of tens of thousands.
But I will confess, since I had a press pass, we were allowed to park, so I did.
As it should be, because the press is feeble.
They use the parking lots there for the sandboxes and demos and things like that.
Oh, so they did use them. Oh, interesting.
Okay. Well,
when I was last there, they did.
Yeah, no, but they had plenty of parking before across the street.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
We should also mention Project Mainline. This was a quick mention, but this is the idea that you can update older Android devices not by pushing it through the manufacturer or the carrier, but actually making it part of Google Play. This has been an ongoing project of Google with Treble to make Android devices more secure. The problem, of course, in the past has been you counted on the manufacturers and the carriers to push that stuff. Now you could just push it down to the Google Store, and people will, in many cases, get that update. That's really a big deal, and it looked like they were getting more and more system components into
much better for security
mainline. Yeah,
We haven't talked about Android being forked and bifurcated in a long time. That used to be a big thing on the show. That because I think this is part of the problem is you couldn't get security updates enough
right. Because
you had an old version of Android. Does this kind of solve that?
Well, there's still forks. There's still Amazons, for instance.
No, I don't mean the forks. That was the wrong word. But I just mean that the fact that some phones don't get updated with the latest version.
Well, that's the theory here is Google realized they'd lost, because Android's open source, they'd lost control of the vast majority of Android phones because the developers, the manufacturers, the carriers had no tie to Google, and Google couldn't force them to accept an update. And there, well, there's reason for it, because it costs them money. It costs them bandwidth, not Google, but the carrier's bandwidth to push those out. The phone manufacturers themselves have to vet these updates to make sure they don't break any customizations the manufacturers make. Google said that they did get a lot of contributions from device manufacturers. They said partners contributed, quote, many changes and collaborated with us to ensure they ran well on their devices. So there is still that issue of, you know, whatever Google patch Google's going to push out over the Play Store, it better not break the phone.
I saw it was pretty cool. I went to one of the developer sessions where, of course, I have no idea what's going on. But simple one line to say that you could force, with a change, force an update on the app. But then there's a step back, which is you can offer the option of an update.
Is this for the end user or the...
This is for the end user.
End user.
Yeah, so it was very, very slick.
It was impressive. I actually watched that one as well, and it was a one-liner to just make a call to, yeah. If there's a newer version of this app, you know, just put a note at the bottom and tell the user, you know, hope the user says update, or you could make it very non-obtrusive. So you had some controls as a developer to make it, you know, a better user experience, but still get the update to the user before they have to go to the Play Store. In fact, they don't have to go to the Play Store at all for this.
Right, right.
They also, as part of this, so this is Treble. Mainline is a new feature that is empowered by Treble, and there is a new file format. Some of these will be APKs, the traditional Android package format, but there is also going to be APEX, Apex Android Pony Express files. And the reason is sometimes these operating system patches have to be performed before a reboot. You can't just do it as if it's an app updating it.
Yes, right.
So Apex will actually load earlier in the booting process so Android updates can be installed on a reboot. And that's also a fairly critical change. It does, however, according to VentureBeat, introduce security risks, which is why Google is building in new fail-safe mechanisms and enhanced test processes to make sure those updates are safe. We've seen man-in-the-middle attacks through updates now many times, I suspect, but at least most recently two times, one with CCleaner, where the update of CCleaner was modified by a bad guy, and so people who downloaded their update, and it also happened, was it Asus? Was it Asus?
Yes.
Or Acer? It was Asus, wasn't it? So the Asus update files had been corrupted. They were still signed by Asus. They were still downloaded by the official Asus updater, but it was a supply chain attack. And so that's something you really have to start paying attention to, because if you could make a malicious Apex file that gets stuck in the stream somehow, you could be updating these phones in exactly the wrong direction. You could be introducing problems. So Google's very good, though, about security. So there are a lot of questions, VentureBeat says. How often will these modules be updated? What about devices that can't get Google Play updates? For instance, if you have a Chinese Android device that doesn't get Google Play updates, what happens there? It does require Android Q from the start. So if you've upgraded the phone to Q, in other words, all of our existing Android Pie phones won't support this, which means it also leaves out the vast majority of unupdatable Android 4 phones. So it's not a panacea, but at least it's, I think it's one direction that makes a lot of sense.
I think we've done
Before I forget.
You're bored now?
No. I think it was a good job, boss.
Before I forget, there actually was some big news that was very hush-hush. And my old GigaOM colleague, Yanko Rutgers, found out through an interview with Google that the Works with Nest program is going away. And come June, that means a lot of the third-party integrations with Nest products will not work. And the big
including
one...
Including If This Then That. Oh, no.
If This Then That. That is correct.
Yep.
Oh.
That is correct. That's big.
That's big, yeah.
Now, in Yanko's headline, he says, also tightens smart home privacy rules. Is that why they're doing this? Is it a security thing?
You know what? I could see why Google is saying that it is, because Stacey and I on the IoT show always say, you know, once you've given your data over, you have no control over what happens to it. So Google is trying to tighten up who has access to what smart home data, because, again, once a third party has it, it's out there and they can do whatever they want. So I would say yes, that's accurate. They are trying to tighten up the privacy a little bit with this.
Yanko interviewed Google Vice President Rishi Chandra, and one of the things Chandra told him is that while it does break If This Then That, they're hoping to put much of that functionality into the Google Assistant. So you'd have routines. You couldn't go to a third party to do the routines. You'd have to go through the Google Assistant to do it. You know, there's it's this double-sided. This is ecosystem lock-in, right? And
it is.
Interoperating with third-party services, yeah, maybe that's a security flaw, but it's also, I think, a real benefit. All right. The commitment to hardware hasn't changed at all, says Chandra.
Stacy just, she must be listening.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. She's out on the West Coast. She said, you know that if this Google thing means that you have to buy a Google Home device that's in your house all the time if you want the level of control that the,
It's a system lock-in. But ecosystem lock-in. But that's what that new, by the way, that new Nest Home Hub Max will be, is it can be the hub.
For Bluetooth and Wi-Fi devices, yes.
Oh, it supports Thread, they said. Is that enough to do everything?
No, I don't.
You still
don't
need Zigbee and Z-Wave and all of the protocols?
Need might be too strong of a word, but you know, I would like to see that happen.
If you wanted to interoperate within your house in all the different devices as opposed to just the ones you got from Nest.
And locally as well, as opposed to going to the cloud all the time, which again, on-device natural language processing, we don't have that in Google Homes today, so that's why they have to be cloud connected.
Did they talk about YouTube at all? Did they talk about any other Google? Did they mention Google Plus? Did they? We have a user.
How cruel.
Too soon.
I love it. I was sad to see it go.
No, I don't think there was. Was there even a session on YouTube? I don't think there. Not yesterday.
YouTube's still part of Google, right? It's not an Alphabet company. It's still part of Google. So, I'm just looking at other stories.
I'm trying to find the schedule.
And most of it's now other companies. I think we can wrap it up because I don't think we need to mention the F word or the or the T word or the S word. I think we can. Google's adding time lapse mode. Let's do a changelog. We do have a couple of changelog things. Yeah, let's do that.
The Google changelog.
Time-lapse mode comes to every Pixel camera. It's debuting on your brand new phone, Jeff Jarvis, the Pixel 3a.
Ooh.
See, I use a Samsung phone, and I've had time-lapse and super slow-mo for a long time. Hyperlapse, they call it. But the time-lapse option will be coming to the camera on all Pixel smartphones. It's, of course, now available if you have a new, brand new one, a 3a, 3 XL, but it'll go on the, as Jeff calls it, OG Pixel, the Pixel 2, and the Pixel 3. Following in an update, you'll find it under the three dots where the more option is. Night sight and slow motion.
Hold the phone. I actually have it.
Already. And yeah, so does our studio audience. In fact, right now I'm moving in slow motion.
Looks like they just started rolling it out.
Nice.
Yay.
Time lapse. Okay. It's in the changelog. It's something new. We mentioned the ground-up redesign for Android Auto. That's coming this summer. There's a new video series from the Webmaster team, the old Matt Cutts Webmaster team. SEO myth-busting. I wish it were Matt, but it's somebody new, Martin Split from the Webmaster Trends team. It's common misconceptions on search engine optimization. That's actually something Matt always was very good at without labeling it such. But if you subscribe to the Google Webmaster channel on YouTube, you'll be able to, you'll get a notification when the new episodes come out. SEO Mythbusters. There is a new AI project from Google AI, that turns your face into a poem portrait.
Oi.
you want to try it? Let's do it here. It's arts experiments with google.com. S. Devlin. It's at the boundaries of AI and human collaboration. Okay. So here's pirated with the morning wind, slated with light of days, harmonious and strange with the first fair beam, biased and frayed, and now they are the flash. I'm going to enter a donate a word, refulgent. Always a good word in poetry. Refulgent. And now a poem featuring the word. And an algorithm trained in over 20 million words of 19th century poetry is generating your unique poem portrait.
I'm doing burrito.
Oh, first it has to access my camera. Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's going to take a picture. Take a picture of me. Take a picture. Apparently it doesn't understand Windows at all. Hello? 3, 2, 1.
The camera wasn't authorized?
That's the picture it got. Okay. Refulgent as the light of the wind, my freedom shall return with delight. That's pretty good.
A burrito is green, and some should set the eye that butte the shore of the sky.
That sucks. You got robbed, my friend.
I got a bad one.
All right. That's the brand new Google AI art.
Can they give back their 20% time, please?
It is Thank a Teacher Week.
Yay!
Thank a teacher. If you can read this, thank a teacher.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
More teachers there.
That's my favorite bumper sticker. That and the one, wouldn't it be cool if the schools got all the funding they wanted and the military had to hold a bake sale? That's my other favorite bumper sticker. So this is Teacher Appreciation Week. And here's an article about it by the National Teacher of the Year, Rodney Robinson.
What's that wonderful company that you can put up requests to the public to crowdfund?
To get more pencils and stuff?
Donors Choose.
Donors choose is great.
If you want to thank a teacher, go to Donors Choose.
Yeah.
You guys done Donors Choose?
Oh, nice!
What kinds of things have you?
Podcasting equipment. Should have come to me first. Like a lot of old stuff. Yeah, yeah. DonorsChoose.org. There are lots of classroom projects available. If you go there, support a classroom, build the future. Teachers and students all over the U.S. It's a shame, really, that we have to do this.
It is ridiculous. Since there is, it's a wonderful.
I would
journey.
Warrant nothing more important than education. Yep.
I see Chromebook requests all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's good if you have an old Chromebook.
Well, I think Kevin soon will.
Yeah.
And he casts off his...
You're getting rid of your slate.
Yeah.
Finally, get ready. Here they come. 53 brand new non-binary emoji on Pixel devices. If your gender is they, them, whatever... If you're, this
is Taylor here?
Gender fluid, non-binary, or gender ambiguous. So this is not necessarily part of the Unicode emoji spec. But if you have a human in an emoji, it makes sense if you're going to do an emoji library to include a variety of gender choices.
You watch Billions?
I do.
It's amazing how the characters have all become absolutely fluid in saying they.
They have no problem saying they.
They have no problem saying they. It's all entered in. Yeah. It's a great example.
Even when they're saying how much they hate Taylor, they still call her they.
Yeah.
Or him they. Yeah. They.
No, they still
call them they. They.
Yes.
It's hard to get used to.
See, but
even her father, like that was a big
even
source of
father?
Tension. Their father.
Even their father.
I think we got to come up with a better pronoun.
It's hard. The Germans did something wacky where they like insert parentheses around because the words are gendered. The whole language is gendered.
Yeah.
Not much you can do about it.
Can't you just use neuter in German?
No, well, because then it's not the actual word.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if German got rid of genders, it would make me a very happy German.
It's the hardest part of many languages is knowing what gender is this box. I don't know. Google Duo group calling now rolling out in the U.S., Canada, and India. Are you excited?
Oh, that was the other thing I was thinking. The Google Hub Max thing.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a great office device?
Yes.
For
Skyping
video calling
and stuff? Calling, yeah.
You use it that way, Kevin?
Use it with my son that way, not in my office, but down in the kitchen. Absolutely.
I think it'd be great to have in the office really, and just say, you know, call me there. And I can still have my computer. I can still do.
They have to use Duo, though.
That's the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
Duo on his iPhone.
Yeah, it's iOS and Android. It's not like you can't. Google Express is a rebranding to Google Shopping. Hope the EU doesn't hear about this.
Wasn't it shopping before?
Yeah. And then the EU got mad at them for favoring Google Shopping, and Google said, well, we don't, it's a non-existent product, but now Express. But Express isn't the same as Google Shopping because, I don't know. See, the problem you have with the Nest devices, I use my Amazon Echoes to buy stuff all the time. You buy them from Amazon. Google has this shopping experience. I think a lot of this is all about making them, giving them parity on the assistant with Amazon, and you can buy stuff.
Speaking of Amazon shopping, the laborless Amazon store has just come to New York. Have you ever bought anything in one of those?
No, the Amazon Go?
Yeah, the Amazon Go is in New York.
Have you tried it?
No, it just announced yesterday. I can't wait to go downtown. I
have to go down to World Trade Center.
Do they take cash now? I thought I read that they were going to take cash there.
Oh.
Don't they have to have a person? I guess not. Machine.
Not necessarily. Yeah. You know.
The idea was you just use your phone to register as you, and then
when you walk in and walk out, that's it. You have a sandwich. Account.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of, they don't want to preclude people who may not have the technology and so on and so forth. And I know in Philly, they just passed laws and Amazon said, okay, we'll take cash at these stores as well.
Hmm.
Right. Yeah. Because there's all kinds of places in New York where that are cashless and they're going to get in trouble now.
Oh, yes. Interesting. Hmm.
Yeah.
That, my friends, is the Google changelog. A couple of quick hits, and then we will get your picks of the week.
This is quick.
Well, it's because you're here and because we're going to dinner. And because there's, I don't know. We spent all day yesterday.
What's the afternoon version of brunch? Yeah.
Yeah. We spent all day yesterday talking about Google. I don't know.
No, that's true.
All right. I'll throw in a few non-Google stories.
Let me see if there's anything.
Verizon.
I'm having such a good time.
Verizon buys Yahoo. Verizon kills porn on Tumblr. Tumblr's user engagement numbers. Verizon says, we're going to sell Tumblr. Pornhub says, we're going to buy Tumblr and bring the porn back. End of story. It hasn't happened yet, but wouldn't that be funny?
Remember, it was started by one of the
David Karp.
David Karp, who was 17 years old when he started it.
And you know what? I think it's really sad because Tumblr was a great thing. It was the easiest way to blog. It was kind of like the young person's version of Google's Blogger.
Yep. Yep.
But much prettier and nicer and simpler. I had a Tumblr for a long time. It was social. It was great. What do you do? It did have that problem where it wasn't completely consumed by adult content.
No, and it wasn't necessarily awful porn. There's plenty of places for that.
Right.
It was just artsier efforts at expression with skin.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know.
It was a place for people to express their gender fluidity.
That's true.
They loved it.
That works.
No, they loved them. See, that just sounds so ungrammatical.
You're too old.
Microsoft's Solitaire, Windows Solitaire, has been inducted into the Video Game Hall of Fame.
Many hours on that. Yep.
Yeah, should be. Absolutely should be. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Maisie Williams, Arya Stark to her fans, has an app? It's called Maisie?
I can't wait till this ends so
Daisy.
I'll close out.
Daisy. An app community designed to help artists grow in their careers is launching worldwide. It was created by Maisie Williams and film producer Dom Santry. This was her tease this morning on Twitter. She said, soon, coming today, everywhere, for everyone. Daisy. You know, I like people use their fame for a lot of things. That's kind of a nice way to use your fame.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm avoiding saying anything spoiling at all here, which means I just have to close my mouth. Weird announcements at Microsoft Build. Here's the weirdest one. Windows 10 will be getting a Linux kernel. It's not the main kernel, but it's another kernel, an actual Linux kernel. For a while, Microsoft's offered something called the Windows Subsystem for Linux, which lets you run or has let you run Linux apps in emulation on Windows 10. But people complained. I complained because it's so slow because of the emulation. So Microsoft said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to include a specially crafted Linux kernel, and it's going to run 20 times faster. Making people wonder how long before they get rid of the Microsoft kernel. Honestly, I wouldn't mind.
Why do you think they did that? Not just for the performance, obviously, but why are they pushing for Linux here?
Well, it's a really, I mean, really, that's a fascinating story, which we talk about every week on Windows Weekly. But this is the new Microsoft. And by the way, it's been hugely successful, right? Briefly, a trillion-dollar company. Satya Nadella is on the cover of Bloomberg Businessweek this week in the clouds with a halo. And what he's really done is take a company that made all its money on Windows and Office and moved it to the cloud. And honestly, the thing that's most sacrilegious is deprecate Windows. For a long time, Nadella would say at these build events, we want to be everywhere our customers are, i.e. iOS, Android, but the best experience will be on Windows. He has dropped that second clause. It's now we just want to be wherever our customers are. They bought GitHub, so they have a large community of open source developers who are looking at them, trying to figure out, is it the old Microsoft or is this some sort of new Microsoft? They've announced that they are going to abandon the engine in their Edge browser and make it based on Chromium. And they've already committed back to the Chromium open source project many commits, including accessibility and language commits. So they're a good partner and an open source, a big open source project, despite the fact that it's kind of a googly project.
This is not your grandfather's Microsoft.
This is a very different Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they had a problem because if you're a developer, and you know this, Kevin, you probably don't want to use Windows unless you're developing for .NET. If you're doing, Visual Basic or F Sharp or C Sharp or something like that. If you're developing in a business, doing line of business applications, okay. But most developers want to either use a Mac or Linux because, they want the tool chain. And Microsoft has a very good, IDE, the Visual Studio. But I think they were losing mindshare. And so they put this WSL in as kind of a SOP, saying, look, you can use Windows and still use your Linux tools. But I'll have to tell you, Crostini is much better. Crostini at least gives you the full-speed Linux because Chrome OS is Linux. So you already have a Linux kernel in Chrome OS. Microsoft was, through this translation layer, emulating Linux calls using the Windows kernel, and it was really, really slow.
I missed it. Yeah. What went so wrong with the demo at Microsoft?
Oh, that was a very sad thing. We could talk a little bit about that. This year is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the Microsoft Build conference, they had planned to demonstrate the HoloLens 2 virtual reality headset. John Knoll, who is creative director at Industrial Light and Magic, and by the way, the guy who with his brother Thomas wrote Photoshop, was joined by Andrew Chaikin, who wrote the book Man in the Moon. He's an Apollo historian. Do we have the rehearsal video? Can we show that? So they had, in rehearsal, they had done this moon landing in augmented reality, and it was really cool. Turns out, since 1999, John Knoll has been collecting data about the Apollo landing. He's an Apollo fanatic. He was 7 years old when it happened. He'll never forget it. And he'd been collecting data. He found in 1999 a trove of telemetry from NASA that gave extremely detailed. Here's the lunar module. They're going to show it landing on the moon. That telemetry showed exactly every second by second everything the lunar module did as Neil Armstrong by hand piloted onto the moon. So he'd been collecting that telemetry and over a period of time, in between Star Wars and Star Trek movies where he was doing the special effects, would create renderings of this. So he was really excited to be able to put it into HoloLens. So they used the Unreal Engine to generate it from Epic. That's a story in itself, by the way. I'll get to that in a second. And they created this very detailed, very accurate recreation of the Apollo launch and landing. They, as you can see here, because we're watching the video, worked fine in rehearsal. But right about when the keynote was about to begin at 8:30 in the morning, it crashed. It failed. They delayed the keynote for 20 minutes trying to get it back. Finally, they could delay no longer. They opened the keynote. Noel and Chaykin walked on the stage. They introduced it, and then they kind of hung their heads and said, I guess it's not going to work, and walked off.
Oh, no.
It was very, no. It was a tragic moment. And what they were going to do was really cool. And really, the culmination of poor John Noel, this is 20 years of work. So if you get a chance, go see. It was Yanko, actually. Yanko Records, who had interviewed Noel about this and had a great story for Variety about it, was all ready to, you know, put it out when they did the demo. And then this is Neil Armstrong yeah. stepping onto the moon and in augmented reality, exactly, you know, as it happened, timing wise and everything. It was really a cool.
So henceforth, any bad demo is what, Apollo'd?
Oh, maybe. It reminded me of Michael Bay's horrific experience at the Samsung launch when the teleprompter stopped working. He didn't know what to say, so he just, again, hung his head and left. The side story that kind of ties back to this Linux thing is that Epic, Tim Sweeney and Epic Games, of course, the creators of the Unreal Engine and Fortnite, very, very wealthy. Tim was an outspoken critic of Microsoft. He was really pissed off at the Microsoft Store, and he had the feeling, that, as many did, that Microsoft was going to start to move all application development into its store, require you to ship through the store, and he saw that as a real detriment. Windows gaming is a big, big part of what Epic does, and it was very critical. Somehow, and I think Rutgers talks about this as well in his piece, somehow Nadella convinced him that it's a new Microsoft, that they are not going to do this, that they welcome, they embrace not only open source, but third-party gaming. And suddenly Sweeney is at Microsoft events talking about he was at the HoloLens 2 announcement and highly profiled at this demo had it come off because they used the Epic Unreal Engine to do it. So that is kind of an example of how Microsoft's shift to a different Microsoft, a more open Microsoft, has really changed the world. All right, let's take a break. I think if there's anything else you want to get in here, I'm glad you mentioned that because I felt so bad and I really wanted to show that video. If you get a chance, go to variety.com, Yanko Rutgers. He's doing a great job there, your former colleague at GigaOM. I really like Yanko. He's
fantastic.
Yeah, he is. So Variety's Hollywood's, you know, trade paper, and he has become the kind of the gateway to the digital world. For all of these Hollywood types, and it couldn't pick a better person to do it. I think he's just really fantastic. Okay. Yeah, I think we pretty much covered.
Yep.
I'm not going to say anything about Facebook. Did you go to F8?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
Why Zero. Not?
In the last 2-3 years, they had a lot about media, and this year they didn't have any.
Well, that's kind of what happened at Facebook, right? They turned their back on media, and it's all local and all.
Or it's too scary a topic.
Yeah, maybe.
So I didn't, you know, I watched the keynote. Benedict Evans thinks he still believes that this was
real.
A major change. Yep, that's real.
Zuckerberg is not blowing smoke when he says privacy is going to be our number one watchword.
Yep.
What was the line that was behind him on the stage? Privacy
is the future.
Is the future. It's kind of hard, you know, for companies like Google and Facebook that are built on tracking.
So here's the thing that finally occurred to me is the problem is, well, two things I'll say. One is the problem is that Facebook is the first company that built its company around the behaviors of people.
Right.
Right. Google didn't. Apple didn't. Amazon didn't.
Well, every company does in a sense because you know you're trying to acquire
but
customers.
Facebook is purely human behavior.
In fact, all of Facebook's content comes from its users.
Right.
They generate no content of their own.
And the second thing is that I think that we in the technology covering world and media are doing it wrong. At this point, it's shifted, and we should be covering not the technology but people's behavior on the technology.
I think you're right.
And
I would agree with you.
In fact, that's a radically different story.
I've been observing that shift, and I expected that shift all along. And I always liken it to this. Remember all the stereo magazines in the 50s where all they talked about was, you know, how much power you'd get without distortion, total RMS. It wasn't at all about the music. And then Rolling Stone comes along, and suddenly nobody's talking about the hardware. It's all about the content. And I think that's another shift. Now, it's not about anything but about people and how they use it, right? So it's not about speeds and feeds, processors, memory, none of that.
And the bad and the good both is from human behavior on technology rather than the technology itself. But we still think it's a technology story.
Yeah.
And finally,
well, it's killing me because I couldn't care less about people. I'm much more interested in hardware.
Obvious, yeah.
So it's killing me. I mean, honestly, this whole network was built.
Your staff was great.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, this whole network was built on which computer should you buy.
Yeah, exactly.
And what happens when it crashes. But we've been, you know, look at this show as a perfect example because this show, more than any show we've ever done on Twit, was about behavior, humans.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we hardly ever talk about speeds and feeds.
So the last piece of this is that I hear all the time that, you know, the internet is a medium and it's just another medium. And I believe pretty firmly that it's not. I made that clear on the show oftentimes. But then it finally occurred to me that the world's turned around, that media is now a subset of the internet.
Yes.
And along with other sectors, right? So media is now 80% of the internet. Communications is 100% in the internet. Finance is, pick a number, 20% in the internet. Crime is 10% in the internet. Every sector of society, every industry, is being brought into the internet, so it becomes synonymous with the net.
It changes how we cover the net, because it's no longer how the net is changing us. The net is us.
The net is society, yeah. Right. And so that's a very different way to think about and cover this as a result. But media and technology still treat it as a technology, a widget, a gadget.
It's a sector.
Right.
And, it's not a sector. It's everything.
It's everything.
We're a sector of it.
Yes.
Not in a sector of
and
us.
And I, for one, welcome the new Borg.
Yeah. I knew this was going to happen. Because I've had a front row seat at that transformation.
Yes. And
really, the way this podcast network has shifted, mm-hmm. we still do a show on computer hardware, but increasingly Twit and Twig and all the shows are not about computer hardware.
I remember the early days of, and how long has this show been going on now?
12 years, something like that.
No, this show.
This show, we're episode 507, so 10 years.
I can't do the math, okay.
Almost a little less than 10
really?
Years,
wow.
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
Woo. I know, it'll be.
Woo.
I know.
But I remember, you know, as I used to come, we used to come on after Twit, and there'd be times in Twit where you'd be talking about the refresh rate of a new Samsung screen. And you were in heaven.
I kind of am sad about it. But this is what happens with age. You'll understand this in about 20 years, Kevin. One of the things that happens with age is the world passes you by a little bit, right? And I still embrace and I love. That's why I keep saying, why don't you just put Linux on it? Just put Linux on it. Everything would be better if you just put Linux on it. Because I still belong to that world, and nobody cares about what operate. And that's kind of what Microsoft's saying. Nobody cares what your operating system is. It's
Chromebook.
Irrelevant.
Chromebook.
That isn't even relevant.
It's not an operating system.
The network is the operating system.
Exactly.
The network is the cloud.
Exactly.
And, you know, Sun used to say this for years. They'd say the network is a computer. That was the Sun Microsystem slogan.
Oh.
And I always thought that doesn't make any sense at all. It makes sense now, doesn't it?
Now it does, yeah.
Yeah, they were right.
This is why I really don't miss doing phone reviews like I used to at Jigaholm.
Oh, I don't miss it either. Except I have to do it.
Okay, what are the specs? You know, compare. Give me a speed test.
It feels, to be honest, a little consumer, promoting consumerism. I don't know what the word would be. It seems a little bit talking about the shiny new thing and ignoring the impact, what it means in society, and how we
opportunities
how we use
it.
Yeah.
So you look at Google's keynote. Come back around before we go into the last commercial. And what were they emphasizing? Humanity.
Yep.
Right? They were emphasizing the woman in India. They were emphasizing the
speech.
That's
a really
stuff,
good point.
Right? And they were trying to say, we're helping. We're helpful.
Yeah.
We're Google. We're here to help.
Helping.
Yes.
But no, that's a very good point. It's not about the bits and the bytes. It's about what you do with it.
This is a developers conference, right? Yeah. If any place was going to get into the nitty gritty of the code, of course, they did more in the developers keynote. But at the main keynote,
do all the big tech companies realize this? I mean, Google now clearly does. I guess Microsoft sort of does. That's really been their pivot. Does Apple? I think they're still tied. They say we're moving to services, but I think they're still tied to the notion of selling a product.
They are.
Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, well, Facebook, that was the problem for Facebook. They were the first in and didn't realize how complex this is.
Amazon. I think they do. I think
they do now.
Because their number one profit center is Amazon Web Services, not what they sell. And I think the selling is really just an adjunct to what they really are. And I think they know it. I think Bezos is very smart.
So it's Soylent Green.
It's made of people. Mm-hmm. Well, good insight. That's nice. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's changing that context helps a lot in understanding what's going on and what we can do and should do about it.
Right. And whom we should blame, which is not always technology companies. It's we have met the enemy and it's us.
And, you know, I mean, for somebody like me to watch Intel just kind of fade into the sunset is such a shock to the system.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think that's what's happening to Apple, too, to be honest with you. I think Apple's fading into the sunset because what they've realized is we offer nothing except brand and fashion. We don't actually offer any tangible benefit. And Google to say, oh, what we really have to offer is a better life for you. That's huge.
Yes.
Apple's pretending that if you buy that new thing, your life will be better. Google's saying, use this, and your life will be better.
Right. And Facebook was trying to say, if you all connect with each other, life will be better. Oops. Well, you're not so good at that, people.
Turns out not.
Right. So Google's coming in and saying, well, we'll do a better job of that.
It's a challenge, though, because what Google's offering is something essentially non-human as an intermediary, which is AI.
Which, in a time when humans are messing up the world, not a bad thing.
Maybe. Yeah, that worries me. I do think that that's going to be one of the pitches of the future is let the machines do it. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a few months ago.
This is the point of David Weinberger's book, which, by the way, if you'd like to come, I'll be interviewing David Weinberger next Wednesday in New York at Book Culture on the Upper West Side.
Oh,
you can go on
and
get tickets there. You should. Just search for me and him in New York and you'll find it.
He wrote the brilliant Clue Train Manifesto.
He was co-author of Clue Train. He wrote Small Pieces Loosely Joined. He wrote Too Big to Know. He's absolutely brilliant.
And his new book is called?
Everyday Chaos, about AI, about just what you just said, is the machines are going to do it better than we can.
Should we let them?
A little choice. They're going to predict better than we can. Right?
So, rethinking knowledge now that the facts aren't the facts. Oh, this is too big to know.
That was called Everyday Chaos.
Oh, okay. The new one is Everyday Chaos. Wow. Carson, let's get him on.
Please give me his info.
I will do that.
We should have triangulation with him.
I think I promised to give you Craig Newmark.
Yes.
You've made so many promises.
I don't know what's going on with Carson? You and Carson, but I think you guys should just go get a room and hash it out. That is so funny. Everydaychaosbook.com. Interesting. Yeah. I like it that you're in touch with big thinkers. You really...
Notice he said that I'm not one. I'm in touch with
you
them.
You kind of know them, can introduce them to us. No, you're a big...
No, I'm not.
You're a big thinker, too.
I hang out with him. Karsten, however.
You're a big thinker, at least by osmosis.
By association. He's a BTBA. Let's take a break. If you guys have a pick or anything you want to show the world, we can do that in a second. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. I am glad sometimes that we still talk about technology and how to use technology to protect your privacy, to protect your hardware, to protect yourself against cybercrime, stolen data. A VPN is the best way to do it. If you're on an open Wi-Fi network, you're on the same network as anybody else in that area, including the guy in the hoodie in the corner there. If you are on even your home network, all your traffic is being watched by your internet service provider. And we know ISPs routinely sell that data on. Protect yourself, protect your privacy by encrypting your internet connection with a virtual private network. And the number one VPN, according to TechRadar, is ExpressVPN. They do it all right. No logging. They keep track of nothing. You are private. You are encrypted from wherever you are all the way out to the ExpressVPN server. They have servers all over the world, so that means you can emerge on the public internet in the country of your choosing. All those servers means there's lots of bandwidth, so ExpressVPN's great that way, too. It's fast. You won't know you're on a VPN, and it's easy to use. They have ExpressVPN apps for Windows, for Mac, for every phone, iOS and Android, every tablet. And those apps, one click, and you're protected. Surf safely on public Wi-Fi. Stop being snooped on or having your data attacked. And it's less than $7 a month. ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. And get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Just go to expressvpn.com. /twig. EXPRESSVPN.com/twig for 3 extra months free when you buy that 1 year package. We thank ExpressVPN for keeping us safe, keeping us private, and for keeping Twit flowing. Thank you, ExpressVPN, and we thank you for using that URL and letting them know you heard it here. ExpressVPN.com/twig. Kevin Toefel, Python guru.
Well, that's putting it, that's overstating it quite a bit. I've only taken 2 classes in mostly Java, but yeah, for our final project, and this is my pick, which kind of goes into
so
the
cool.
theme of making technology more helpful to people. For our final project, a group of myself and 3 other students took some open source software from OpenAPS, and we quote unquote hacked diabetes, basically made a pancreas in the cloud using Python. We started with Java, but quickly switched over to Python.
I love this. Pancreas is a service. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Yes. It's I learned an awful lot about diabetes, for one thing, and just also obviously about programming in general. So what you're seeing there is a real-time chart from one of the actual students' glucometer, which we read the data from, put it up in the cloud on a MongoDB, and then suck it back down into Google Sheets using APIs with Python and also into Data Studio. So you can track blood sugars and insulin levels in a graph, which you can even share that with your practitioner, your health practitioner. But additionally, OpenAPS software, it runs on a Raspberry Pi that's part of this loop, and it literally adjusts your insulin levels in quote unquote real time. It's every 5 minutes, as opposed to what the student was doing before, and that was manually hitting buttons to add insulin throughout the day. So it was a really fascinating project from, you know, from a human standpoint as well as a technical standpoint. I learned a ton. I also made a total goofball out of myself in the video overview of the project. These students are going for jobs and internships, and I am not. So I wanted to let them discuss the technical part. So I basically played a goofy news announcer in our video.
Oh, this is cute, Kevin. That is awesome.
So I even put little CNN breaking news. I'm pretty much a goofball there, and I just interviewed these guys about the project.
Wow.
Makes me want to go back to school.
Where did you do this course, Kevin?
Oh, I'm at my local community college, Montgomery County Community College. Yes.
That's really ambitious.
It's fantastic.
That is very neat.
Yeah.
This is the second comp sci class that you take there. And the second half of this class, you literally do a project full time. There is no more class. It's literally doing a massive project, and then everybody presents their project in the atrium of the main building on the last day of school to the president of the university and other teachers.
Wow.
And companies come in as well. And it was such a great experience. And my hope is that I've been talking to them about being an adjunct instructor for the intro to programming class.
You should be great at that. Yeah.
I would love to do it, because this is why I went back to school, not just to learn. I could have done that online, but to mentor and share real world experience and what it was like to work at Google. I hope I gave back more than I got from this class to the students and the college as a whole. I loved it.
You know, it reminds me, we watched before the Microsoft event on Monday, we watched the Imagine Cup, which is 3 teams in the finals. There are 3 collegiate teams with an invention. And in this case, the winner of the Imagine Cup, Brian Chang, who's a freshman, he's 18 years old. There he is standing next to Satya Nadella. He won $150,000. He's a freshman at UCLA. He has something he's patented, patent pending, called Easy Glucose. It's the first I've ever seen real non-invasive glucose monitoring. It puts a lens on a smartphone, has a machine learning database, takes a picture of your eye, and is able to, with some serious accuracy, measure blood sugar.
Wasn't that what Google was going to do with the lens?
They wanted to do with that lens. But the thing here is kind of what you were doing, is using machine learning to take a lot of readings, and then the machine learns, well, this is what glucose level looks like. I don't think the $150,000 he got from Microsoft is going to be much compared to how much he's going to get from some big company if he perfects this.
This is what's going on.
These are young people doing amazing things.
My mother was a brittle diabetic, And so when I was young, it's amazing the instinct you have. When I was a kid,
you could tell.
I could recognize before anybody in the family when she was ready to go into a reaction.
Yeah.
It's like those dogs that know
it's
you're
almost defensive. You need to know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely the case. And so that's where machine learning does come in.
Sure.
Is that it's the opportunity.
You had some instinct, some intuition. But what if you had many, many more data points and you could say, oh, yeah, this is what the eye looks like when the glucose level is 100 or 200.
So David Weinberg, this is a case that David Weinberg was the only one who did it. But in his book, he talks about the case of the chicken sexers.
Yeah. We, Petaluma, actually, I interviewed the last chicken sexer of Petaluma. Because when, this was many years ago, this is a nice old guy.
This is in your heyday.
He was retiring. This is when I was at my peak at KNBR. When a chick is born, they need to determine if it's a male or a female, and it's not obvious, apparently.
Right. And so even the chicken sexers don't really know how they know,
they
but
just
they know. So it's like.
I did. I tried to. How do you know? He said, well, you just know.
So that machine learning is the new chicken sexer.
And there's your show title, ladies.
There's the title. There's the title. I keep trying.
What's your number, Mr. Jarvis?
All right. Well, Matthew Ingram, our friend, tweeted that out of the New York Times financial statement, the paper's crossword is the fifth largest digital subscription product of any kind offered by a U.S. news provider.
I'm not surprised. I pay for it.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Love
it. I start on Monday and I work my way up to Sunday.
So when the Times talks about its digital subscriptions, it's including food and crosswords in there.
So it's not just the fifth largest product of the Times. It's of any kind
offered by any news operation.
Right.
Jeez, so Louise. And I don't know if this is fair. Maybe Stacey would show it next week. But she just tweeted what her camera caught of her dog going to the door. And it's so sad and sweet.
Oh, because they're moving.
Well, no, this is the husband's leaving.
Oh, the husband's leaving. My Y system has picked up the door just shut behind my husband. He's left the house. His dog's... Oh, look at the tail. It just goes... Oh, he keeps going away. That's hysterical.
I'm just going to go for a walk.
Oh, no. So a good friend of our show and a great guy in general, Mike Elgin's son, Kevin... is a whiz with technology, and he has launched a Kickstarter for something that is super, super cool. This is called Chatterbox. Just launched a couple of days ago, so there's still 58 days to go, but don't delay. You want these. They've already exceeded their goal. It's a smart speaker that kids build and program, so they're not relying on Amazon's Echo.
We want what's best for our kids.
Go ahead. You can play the audio. Let's give them a nice plug. Show my video.
There's too many screens with too many distractions, not enough creativity and learning, and definitely not enough privacy. Meet Chatterbox, the world's first build-it-yourself, program-it-yourself smart speaker for kids. Think of it like an Amazon Alexa, but one focused on privacy that kids can build and teach to bring their creativity to life.
They teach it.
Our simple step-by-step instructions make problem-solving fun and hands-on. Building Chatterbox is as easy as building a paper airplane. The Visual Skill Builder helps kids learn about artificial intelligence while easily programming voice skills. Kids can set up magic words to control lights.
Kevin worked at Tinker for a while, which did something similar on an iPad.
Story adventures. Anything is possible. Chatterbox is a fun, personal, and private way for kids to develop important communication, critical thinking.
He did Piper, which was a build-it-yourself computer, right?
Our team's collective experience has built educational software and hardware products.
There's Kevin right there.
Used by millions of kids all over the world. We're parents, educators, designers, and developers committed to making...
So cost.
Meet Chatterbox, and if you pledge $99, you'll get the super early bird. There's 12 left of those.
Ooh.
Chatterbox smart speaker, build it yourself and program it yourself smart speaker. If you pledge $119, that's going to be the second tier, and I think that's just, you know, as they've sold out the first tier. $238 for two of them, and then it goes on up. And so if you want to sponsor a school and get eight of them.
So teachers, yeah, we can go to.
Hint, hint. You could sponsor a school, and that would be a really fun school project, I think. It, more than just building and programming, it really teaches kids how these things work, that they're not just a wizard in a box, you know. And that's really the problem, I think, as we move to this world where we go beyond what you know, hardware understanding, suddenly it just becomes magical things, magical items. And I think it's important for, especially for kids to contextualize it by understanding, oh, that's just a machine.
Right.
That's not,
but it's
there's not a person in there
that I'm in control of.
And I control it.
Yeah.
And this is how it's programmed by a human somewhere. I think really an important thing to understand and learn. So good for you, Kevin. It's on Kickstarter. Go to Kickstarter and search for Chatterbox, the smart speaker the kids build and program. And I'm glad he's already reached his goal, but there's still lots more to go. Well done, Kevin. Good for you. Mike Elgin's son, Kevin Elgin. What age is it targeted at? I don't know. That's a good question. They show these kids are pretty young.
We have
young.
A former kindergarten teacher, now IT guy in the room.
I bought fourth grade. One for my nephew who's going to be six.
Kids, it says kids as young as 7 years old. So, you know your kid and whether your kid could adjust to this. I mean, the programming is all dragging. It's all that, kind of modular programming.
Blockly or something.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
One of the cute things at I.O., they had a session which was pretty full. For make your first assistant script, right?
Yeah.
And basically all you have to do is do a spreadsheet.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
This is going to be more than just a simple smart speaker, though, because they're incorporating Wolfram Alpha. It has a Raspberry Pi. It's powered by Mycroft AI. So it is a sophisticated voice assistant that you'll probably end up using, which is also very cool. It comes with a Raspberry Pi 3B Plus. Plus the special chatter voice hat. We are done for this week in Google. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We had a great time. I want to thank our teachers. Remember, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. Jared, Ryan, Brian, and Roland.
From
is the Sacramento Unified School District? Is that?
All over.
Sacramento. Yeah.
Notice nice. They're here in shorts because it's hot up there.
Yeah, they're probably freezing their buns off here.
Yeah.
It's always my favorite part of going on the Golden Gate Bridge is watching all the tourists in shorts saying, but I thought it was summer. Anyway, thanks, guys, for what you do. Teaching is absolutely the most important thing anybody does. It beats podcasting. I can tell you that. we do this show every Wednesday around 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you want to come by and watch, you can. We stream audio and video live at twit.tv/live. If you're watching the live stream, please join the chat room because they're doing the same thing at irc.twit.tv. You can get on-demand episodes of this and every show we do at our website, twit.tv. For Twig, it's twit.tv/twig. That's easy to remember. And as I mentioned, we are now at 507 shows, so we're getting close. In about 13 weeks. We will be at our 10th anniversary. Can
wow.
you believe that?
I can't believe you've let me do this for this long.
I can't believe that we were young men when we started. we weren't, so there. That's why I can't believe it. You can download episodes at Twig, twit.tv/twig, or subscribe. That's actually the best thing to do. Find your favorite podcast application. Subscribe, and that way it'll be on your phone the minute it's available of a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.